Welcome to episode 15 of Super Entertainment Presents the Television Crossover Universe on the Grand Geek Knoll Network, coming to you from Castle Wolfenstein, hosted by the TVCU crew. Joining me from Studio B is James Boyachuk, CEO of 18th Wall Productions. From Studio C, Chris Nigro, author and founder of Wild Hunt Press. And from Studio I, Crazy Ivan Sobosky, convention panelist and lover of cheese. And I am Robert E. Ronsky Jr., author of the Horror Crossover Encyclopedia. We are the TVCU crew. The TVCU crew are a team of crossovers who devote way too much of their time to connecting the dots through official crossovers and Easter eggs in order to demonstrate a shared fictional reality that we call the Television Crossover Universe. So welcome to all three of you from Parts Unknown.
Thanks.
So time for our shameless plugging. Chris, we'll start with you. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to say once again that I'm in the process of renovating the Godzilla Saga website. Updated glossary with a bunch of pics added, new entries, some expanded entries, and it is going to be the bomb.
All right. And James, how about you?
Well, just a few days ago, The Speckled Band, the latest in our Sherlock Holmes series, released, and it's doing very well so far. Definitely get on this bandwagon while you still have the chance before it goes careening off that cliff, as bandwagons tend to do. It is the secret history of one of the most famous Sherlock Holmes stories, The Adventure of the Speckled Band. And don't you just want to find out just where the leopard and the monkey came from, that wonder in English manners grounds? And that's all I have for right now.
Nice. And Ivan, how about you? What do you got?
I've got a leopard and a monkey.
Aha.
And I'm not telling where they came from.
They escaped from a zoo.
Shh. You weren't supposed to tell.
Oops.
Great. Right. Well, now I've got nothing. Thanks.
I just wait to snake my way into that mystery that James is talking about in his book.
I also have nothing, really. Well, I've been writing and writing and writing, but, you know, nothing new to plug other than, you know, listen to the previous 14 episodes and the same stuff. But I'm writing and writing and writing so that I can have more stuff to plug in the future. I did want to briefly talk about... if you read some of my posts or heard our last episode, I had announced that our guest tonight would be Jess Thomas Cook, who is a filmmaker. He wasn't able to come on the show because he unexpectedly was filming, which is his job. So we wish him the best.
What? A filmmaker making films?
Yeah, exactly. So,
how rude.
So, putting a high-paying job over us?
Yeah, exactly. He chose money over us. So, you know,
that's it. I'm leaving.
He has rescheduled. He'll be on in about 6 weeks from now, and we look forward to having him back on then. So instead, we've decided to start a discussion, and we don't know how far we're going to get into it, but we're going to discuss tonight the history of shared cinematic universes. We'll at least get through Universal Horror tonight, probably. We'll see how it goes. This is our first guestless show where we just do the discussion. And if we get good reviews on it, we'll probably do a lot more discussions. And if we don't, we'll probably still do it because, you know, we don't care.
Sometimes we just don't have a guest.
Sometimes we don't have a guest and we just want to talk about crossovers. So we're going to go to commercial, and when we come back, we're going to be very in-depthly talking about Universal Horror. And we'll be right back. All right, we are back. And so I wanted to start off this discussion. So I wanted to start talking with Universal Horror. That seems to be the first shared reality in cinema. So I want to start off by talking about Batman v Superman. Now, bear with me. Hold on.
Wait a minute.
It's relevant. So I was reflecting on how Dracula and Frankenstein are go together so much nowadays that a lot of people don't even think of them as crossovers. Though, you know, they came out in separate books by different authors, decades apart from each other. You know, if it wasn't for Universal, people wouldn't necessarily have ever thought of the two characters, you know, being together, the two series being together. And it came down to money. And I was thinking of that because Batman and Superman, it doesn't make sense that it took so long to get them in a movie together, when, you know, they've been, you know, most people don't even think of them as a crossover otherwise, you know, because they've been together since the 1950s. Now, in the first decade of their time, they were separate series that, like, never very seldom, you know, touched each other. But, you know, afterwards. So the point of that was that Dracula and Frankenstein, if not for Universal, wouldn't be, like, you know, the horror's version of the world's finest.
That makes sense. Although, personally, I would think it's, you know, vampires and werewolves that would be the horror version of the world's finest, because you see the vampire-werewolf combination in so many movies.
Right. And you know, that's another interesting thing about what Universal did is they invented werewolf lore as we know it today with the Wolfman, because they made up most of the stuff in that movie. And most people today assume that it's, you know,
well,
real Eastern.
Borrowed from similar legends.
Right, but
like the American Manitoba and Wendigo, they borrowed from those to come up with the whole curse aspect of lycanthropy.
Right. But a lot of people think it's all Eastern European lore that, you know, that's really was the invention of Universal.
And weren't vampirism and lycanthropy interconnected back to the folklore, Ivan, like a world's finest kind of thing going way back in history?
Oh, very much. I mean, the Greeks didn't even really distinguish between vampires and werewolves. Their words for both of them were very similar. And it was always believed that if you were a werewolf in life, you would come back as a vampire in death.
And wasn't it interesting that when Bram Stoker conceived of Dracula and gave him those cool morphing abilities, a wolf was one of his frequent chosen phenotypes?
Well, it's also one of mine.
Nope.
I mean, yes, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and so I was thinking, you know, when Dracula and Frankenstein both came out in 1931, there was no actual connection between the two. They came out as two separate series. They weren't, you know, they was like, oh, let's see, we got one horror movie, let's get another horror movie based on a classic literature, and you know. And then they were following a theme. You know, the next one, both of them followed up with female counterparts for the next one, Bride of Frankenstein, Dracula's Daughter. But it wasn't until, you know, they came out with The Wolfman and decided to do a sequel to The Wolfman that we finally got a shared reality from them. You know, Frankenstein meets The Wolfman.
And interestingly, Universal never delivered to us a Frankenstein-Dracula mashup, like just a duo mashup, like we're getting with Batman versus Superman.
Right.
Well, even the duo mashup of Superman v. Batman isn't just those two. They're throwing in an awful lot of other DC characters.
Right.
And it's a shame Universal never did that. And I mean, there were plans we've always heard, like the Mummy Karras. Am I pronouncing that right, guys?
I think so.
Karras is good.
They were planning on throwing him into the original version of House of Frankenstein, which I believe was called The Devil's Brood. But that didn't happen. And the only time we really got another monster, another Universal classic, I should say, thrown into the mix is the brief but memorable cameo of the Invisible Man in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, the last Universal monster mashup.
Right.
quite possibly the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
And all that potential unrealized.
Now, for me, I discovered Universal Horror backwards through Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein first, which is, you know, the genesis for the horror crossover encyclopedia, because of, you know, the mashup, and it was clever that how they combined all three, though of course not the first time. Going back after Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, we got House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula, which I always thought were odd titles because it seemed like House of Frankenstein makes it a Frankenstein movie and House of Dracula makes it a Dracula movie, but it combines all three. But really, Talbot, the Wolfman, is actually the main character of both of those. He's the one with the biggest part in both of those House movies.
Well, the three main monsters, he is the only one with the human side,
right,
that the audiences are expected to relate to. So,
right, and he's got
despite
that.
Despite the fact that, you know, Dracula can even be done as a tragic figure, the Frankenstein monster almost always is. But Larry Talbot is the human.
Now, guys, just as we can maybe consider, and we did consider Frankenstein and Dracula, Universal versions, that is, as Universal's answer to DC's World's Finest, would that mean Dracula, Frankenstein, and the Wolfman are their equivalent of what DC calls their Trinity?
I would say so. I would say so, and it's definitely, you know, House of Frankenstein was the Avengers of its time, you know.
Oh yes.
So maybe we can.
Of course, the Avengers movies, that was done with the intent of a shared universe.
Right.
So it builds very differently than the way Universal happened to put their stuff together after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah. Marvel Cinematic Universe was the first time that they start. It feels like they started off with the intent. Though the first Iron Man film was less crossovery, because they had to see if it was going to make money first.
But it didn't.
But even at the very end of it, they had the intention. They had Samuel L. Jackson pop up and mention the Avengers.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen in the comics that way, with the comics version, which is interesting.
No, the comics happened the same way Universal did. It was separate things that, after they saw the success of the Justice League, Marvel decided they had to have their own team books too. And
of course, let's face it,
Fantastic Four.
Stan Lee started crossing over everything like really early on, and it helped that he wrote everything in the beginning at Marvel.
Oh, this is true.
Yeah, he didn't
having a single creative team that helped a lot.
Yeah.
He didn't invent the crossover in comics, but can we say he perfected it?
I would say he opened the door that DC later copied. Ironically, DC and Marvel have been copying off of each other for years, and then building upon each other's concepts.
Yeah, because Justice League of America did appear first, but the characters did not regularly run into each other in the comics outside of that one comic book. But in Marvel, Spider-Man would regularly run into Thor flying around when he was swinging around the rooftops of New York City.
Right. Yeah.
Even before Justice League, you would still have Superman and Batman meeting often enough that it wasn't considered unusual anymore.
And that was because of money, too. Because in 1954, they needed to reduce the paper count, and they didn't want to sacrifice either Superman or Batman, so they just combined the stories.
So since DC had distinctively different, or that was kind of redundant, distinct editing teams for each of the characters, it just didn't have that, how do I put it, sense of crossovery camaraderie that Marvel had, like, right from the start, or almost from the start. We had all these
in the early days, you know, 40s and 50s, a lot of the comic books at DC made it look like these characters just naturally belong together whenever they teamed up, despite the fact that their books had a very different feel. Whereas in Marvel, when they met in the early days, it was obvious that they were different characters and they had different viewpoints, and you know, how well did the Avengers originally get along with the Hulk in the comics?
Right.
About as well as they did in the movie.
And, you know, getting that, actually, I'm going to use that to segue back to the Universal films. I think that's why those characters worked so well together was they all had different origins, different storylines, but that chemistry is what put them together. You know, Talbot was the enemy of Dracula, you know, and Frankenstein monster was being used by Dracula or other scientists, you know. But the Wolfman was actually a good guy until he changed, you know. You know, in House of Dracula, he actually got it cured at the end, though it apparently didn't take.
Until Jeff Roven explained it decades later.
Yeah. How was it that Jeff Roven explained that the cure?
The removed part simply grew back. Mm. It was that simple, wasn't
yeah.
it? Correct, Ivan?
Yes. And it makes sense because a werewolf is supposed to be able to heal from damn near anything.
Right. And, you know, because, you know, House of Frankenstein, and I mean, House of Dracula ended with that happy ending for Talbot, you know, and then here he is. And, you know, getting into Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein, even though Abbott and Costello films were not technically linked together, except when us crossovers try to link them together, but from the studio's point of view, they weren't linked together, other than the Buck Private films. In a way, it still brings in that Abbott and Costello series because Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein was the first of Abbott and Costello meeting the monsters, which became a trending thing after that. Invisible Man, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and The Mummy.
The Mummy.
And
on their show, they did meet the creature.
Yes, yeah.
I hate to include Clarice, the cousin of Caris, but okay, there it was.
Yeah, well, it was intended to be, you know, capitalizing on the series, you know.
Well, it was a parody the way right. I saw it, rather than a direct incorporation.
Right. I mean, just like the original Mummy film is a completely not part of the same series as the rest of the Mummy films, you know. Imhotep's storyline was not the same as Karis' storyline.
They can call me a
But they're all still considered to be the same series. They acknowledge each other
right.
within the context of the movies.
Right, exactly. What I liked about Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein is that, you know, all the monsters played it straight, but Abbott and Costello played it for laughs. And, you know, looking back on Abbott and Costello's history, that's not uncommon, especially in their earliest films. There was always a serious storyline going on in their films with, you know, some leading man and some, you know, woman and some romantic thing going on. And then they'd just be there too, you know, doing their pratfalls and stuff as comic relief. And it seems
for most of their movies, they had Abbott and Costello as the comic relief characters that Shakespeare would originally have in the background.
Right.
But in Abbott and Costello movies, they were in the foreground, and the main storyline was in the background.
Right, exactly.
Rob, could some of these have been considered the first cinematic genre crossovers?
Well, absolutely. And I always thought Freddy versus Jason versus Jay and Silent Bob would have been a great addition in this tradition.
Would have been rad.
Rad.
But, you know, Abbott and Costello and the monsters, it wasn't too much of a stretch from their previous films with what they had been doing. And Abbott and Costello, meeting the monsters, technically from the studio's point of view, they weren't all in the same universe.
Did their personalities?
Huh? What was that, Chris? Did
you
I lose?
May have lost Chris.
Oh, I lost him mid-sentence.
Oh, no.
Mid-word.
That's unfortunate. Well, he was saying something about their personalities.
Yeah. You know, that's speaking of their personalities, that's why crossovers like to think that, like myself, like to think that all their characters were the same. Especially when you have Abbott and Costello meets the Invisible Man was also a follow-up to the Invisible Man films, which included Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein.
I got cut from the call.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy, I know.
Yeah, so we answered your question.
In and out there.
We answered your question that you didn't finish.
Since I didn't finish it, what was the answer? Because I didn't hear it.
So, are you eating? Are you eating something?
Not me.
Me? That noise was me.
Oh, okay.
I had my mouth in something, but it wasn't food. It was a bag. Oh. I smelled cheese. I was trying to get the cheese.
Okay. So, you know, the cameo at the end of Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein makes it part of the Invisible Man series, and then Abbott and Costello Meets the Invisible Man. Is also part of the Invisible Man series, and yet we're supposed to believe that the characters played by Abbott and Costello in those two films were not the same characters, despite the fact that they act exactly the same, and that's what leads people like myself or Dennis Power to say that they clearly have to be the same guys.
And you know what else Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein did? That the previous Trinity mashups with the monsters didn't do. We actually got the monsters together, I mean, at the same time in the same storyline, whereas in the two House of films, they weren't part of really, well, they were integrated into a single storyline, but they didn't cross over with each other so much as the other characters, if you get my meaning.
That's true. They had different storylines within a larger storyline. And it was usually like the criminal or the mad scientist. In House of Frankenstein, there was that criminal with the traveling show thing was kind of like the one who touched on everybody's story. And then in House of Dracula, it was the mad scientist and his hunchbacked assistant that was.
I believe it was Dr. Nyman in House of Frankenstein.
I couldn't think of his name.
And Dr. Edelman was it in House of Dracula?
Yes, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they were like the connector between like three separate stories.
And one at a time. We never got the monsters together. I mean, we got Talbot defending himself from the Frankenstein monster at the end of House of Dracula, but not in lycanthrope form. I was disappointed.
Yeah. Well, we had previously Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, though.
And that's the only actual battle we got. Okay, we got Dracula battling the Wolfman and Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, but it was kind of, I don't know, it was always kind of a wussy battle because Dracula was not up to his full potential, in my opinion. He was running and throwing chairs, and that's about it.
One of the reasons for that was Lugosi couldn't handle it physically. It was one of the reasons that he wasn't cast in the House movies was because he couldn't physically handle it.
I wish they would have got a stuntman for those scenes because it would have been once again rad.
Plan 9.
Those movies came out, they were still considered separate franchises.
Right.
And nobody wants their guy to be the one to lose the fight.
Right. It's one of the reasons that Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash never made it as a movie. Because Bruce Campbell insisted that Ash had to win. And Robert Englund was like, eh.
Which I must say surprises me because when you have a crossover between two characters from different franchises, but one is considered the good guy definitively and the other the bad guy, you would expect the good guy to win. That's what happened with King Kong versus Godzilla, if you don't mind me bringing that.
King Kong was fine.
Yeah, he was the good guy, so to speak, at the time, so he won, and Toho didn't complain that RKO's boy or Universal's boy won.
Right, and Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, Freddy and Jason lose in every film, so... I don't see why it would have made a difference.
I know that Bruce likes to talk about this as something where he said, okay, I don't even see how this is a real fight. Ash blows away Freddy, Ash blows away Jason. And he says that that was you know, I don't think he wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that he was interested at that time in his life in doing more Ash. And so he probably made some demands that he knew the studios wouldn't agree to.
But now that he's doing Ash again, what do you think, Ivan, of the prospects that we might finally get that Trinity combat on the big screen?
On the big screen, zero.
How pessimistic!
Well, because they've done the reboots of the other two series.
Yeah, the other two series have gone into reboots, and Ash, as the current Ash series goes, is only following Evil Dead 2. It's ignoring Army of Darkness and the first Evil Dead. And the directions they're going there are creatively something they want to continue there. Taking Ash back to the movies would take away from the TV show.
There's got to be some way. I mean, if only they'd hire us and let us put our heads together, Ivan.
Well, if you remember, a couple of years ago, there was an Evil Dead reboot movie. It did not have Ash.
Until the end.
Right. Well, Bruce Campbell did show up and make a cameo. He did say groovy. Whether or not he was canonically part of the story, I would say no.
Right.
It seemed like a teaser, and at that time, there was talk that they would do another Ash movie, and then they would do another Maya movie, and then there would be a movie crossed over Ash with Maya.
Right.
Fell apart.
Right, because it seems like they made that movie very ambivalent to whether it was a sequel or a reboot.
I'm still hoping...
Personally, I loved it.
Yeah.
I'm still hoping all those fan films are popping up on YouTube, whet the appetite, you know, of the big guys with the real money and copyright. Whetting the fans' appetite. Okay, mine, but I like to think I'm not alone.
You're not alone.
Yeah.
We're here with you. You know, in completely separate studios.
But Freddy vs. Jason for me was like the Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. For like our time period, and I had really hoped that would lead to a slasher like unified universe of some sort.
And there was talk of that at the time that Robert Englund was very willing to do more Freddy versus movies. There was talk of a Freddy versus Chucky, if I remember correctly. I may be wrong. I'm sure somebody out there could tell us, but they can't call in because this show isn't live. Ah.
Yeah. We also got Alien vs. Predator on the big screen around that time, too. That was another big
screen. Exactly 1 year later.
Mm-hmm.
To the day, yeah.
Of course, the difference there is that Freddy vs. Jason, although it had been alluded to in the movies before, it was still a new thing when we got the movie. When we did Alien vs. Predator as a movie, that had already been going on for years, over a decade, if I remember, in comic books and video games.
Yeah.
So it was sort of, it sort of became its own franchise, sort of.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah. It was no longer franchise versus franchise. It was an AVP franchise.
Right. AVP was based on the comic, based on the video game, based on the movies.
Well, I still thought it interesting that they didn't seem to follow really any of the ideas that we saw in the comics. They were their own thing, pretty much, the movies. And we got two of them.
Very much.
Yeah. Right. Well, they had to count on the fact that a lot of people going to see the movies probably didn't read the comics.
It's also cheaper to have a movie set in modern day instead of having an entire new science fiction setting built for it.
Right.
And I'd still like to see, you know, 20th Century Fox do a triple threat with Prometheus / Alien / Predator like they did in the like Dark Horse did for them. I think that would be cool. Minimum of red tape.
The red tape actually gets messy now because Prometheus is part of the Alien franchise, not part of the AVP franchise.
Yep.
And Ridley Scott's been very clear that he does not consider AVP to be part of the Alien series.
Right. In fact, Prometheus is connected to Alien more than it is the entire franchise.
Yet Dark Horse doesn't seem to exactly agree, and they even gave us an engineer against a Predator. And I think that
it's easier to do things in comic books. In comic books, Marvel and DC can have their guys butt heads. You'll never see that in a movie.
Right. You're never going to see Superman versus Spider-Man in a film.
Not even in a cartoon.
No.
I will never say never because there are so many other things we're getting now that I would have thought was impossible so long ago. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
Actually, I agree with you, Chris, when it comes to what I haven't said about cartoons. I bet that someday we may see like a JLA Avengers cartoon, but having having a live action, it's for one thing the stars that they would have, all the people they would have to pay would be astronomically expensive.
Well, fair warning, Rob, if that happens within our lifetime, I'm going to publicly say to you, I told you so.
And I'll be okay with that because I would love it.
If it happens in my lifetime, I will be glad to say I was wrong.
Yeah.
Because, yes, that would be something impressive, incredible. I think the closest I'm ever going to see, though, was that classic episode of Saturday Night Live where Superman was having a party in his apartment and all these other characters from Marvel and DC came over.
With John Belushi as the Hulk.
Or maybe those fan-created advertisements for crossover movies. Like
There have been fan-created actual crossover movies, fan-created, and those are, in some cases, very, very well done.
What's those ones? Superhero Beatdown, is it? Does the videos?
Yes, by Bat in the Sun.
Yeah, those are amazing.
Most of those are great.
I love those.
When you take money and copyright out of the equation, amazing freaking things happen. I could say freaking on here, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, good.
But in almost every instance, something created by a fan is not going to be considered part of the franchise.
True, but it does show us what could possibly be, you know, if they get their heads together and say business and pleasure and coolness can mix sometimes.
Yes, and there's fan projects where you have professionals involved with the franchise get involved. Ernie Hudson has appeared as Winston Zeddemore in a Ghostbusters fan film, but that's still not canonical to Ghostbusters.
But even in officially licensed stuff, it doesn't always necessarily make it canon. A lot of like Doctor Who novels, you know, if they can get contradicted in the show, and you know, then like, well, it's not the books aren't canon.
Doctor Who is this weird, strange contradiction where everything is literally canon, and if you contradict something as a writer, it's considered bad pool.
Yeah,
you're not doing your job properly, which is part of the fun.
According to Steve Moffat,
everything's canon.
Everything is canon.
Except for that.
Especially the stuff that contradicts.
Except for that Sherlock Holmes is real and not real. Things like that.
And, you know, thanks to miscreants like us and, you know, this alternate reality concept, nowadays it could be argued a bit cogently that what counts as canon may depend on who you ask or what timeline you follow.
Well, for instance, you know, Star Wars has thrown out all of their expanded universe.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention the Bantha in the room, but yes, Star Wars used to have everything canonical that wasn't in a movie, and now they don't.
Yeah, and I just consider it a divergent timeline, because I want to count everything.
It's a reboot. It's a reboot just like any comic book reboot or the Spider-Man movie reboot. It's a reboot, and after the reboot, they choose what is and is not canon.
And that includes Marvel's original Star Wars series is also not canon anymore?
No.
All of those are no longer canon.
They threw out
the work. The 7-foot-tall green rabbit is no longer canon, even though he has appeared on the cover of one of the new in-canon Star Wars comics.
So Splinter in the Mind's Eye is gone.
Yay.
Yes, and that's the one that had Cthulhu.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Dean Foster wrote Cthulhu into that book. He calls him Pulmajima, but it makes sense that on a different planet you have a different name.
Maybe Cthulhu is responsible for splitting the timeline. We should think about that.
Maybe you're responsible for splitting the timeline. What about that, Chris?
I blame time travelers. And I haven't seen my branch. I haven't seen my branch metaphor where I literally used a branch.
Yes, he actually used a branch from a tree to go over the divergent timeline theory as per Back to the Future.
Yeah, it's basically the same as the Back to the Future idea.
Except made of wood instead of chalk.
Except that basically when one new branch is created, it doesn't necessarily erase the old branch, because you can see on the tree there's two branches. So there's, you know, two futures that break off from a single point, which is why time travelers can come back from different future timelines to the same past.
Careful now. We don't want to turn this into the time travel episode.
Yeah, that's true.
We got to save something.
But that's basically how I accept, because if all the different branches are still there and you just can't necessarily see them, you know, then that helps to when canon gets rebooted.
Hey, look what the Teenage Ninja Turtles animated movie Turtles Forever did as an example.
Right, and Ghostbusters Get Real did the same thing, and then DC Universe versus Masters of the Universe did the same thing.
Did they? I didn't read that one.
Yeah, they showed like an alternate universe, I mean a multiverse where every version of Masters of the Universe exists out there.
It happened in the Spider-Verse crossover in Marvel too. If you think about it, I mean Spider-Man from Prince.
That they did, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, it crossed over mediums. We saw the Japanese version of Spider-Man from the TV show produced in Japan.
Well, it literally crossed over mediums because the Ultimate Spider-Man comic book, I mean cartoon, was traveling through the Spider-Verse at the same time.
And it's very interesting that mediums were literally
very meta.
So yeah, so I mean, anything could potentially run into anything. If you think about it, and you know, there's enough red tape remover around. We're red tape removers, if you think about it.
Speaking of reboots,
well, we've had plenty of non-canonical appearances of characters meeting other characters. I mean, how many times do Marvel and DC use each other's characters in background stories?
Right.
Or as background figures, rather.
And let's face it, if we only counted what was officially canon, we wouldn't be doing any of this.
And then there's the thing about pastiches, like, you know, we got the Squadron Supreme that in the Marvel multiverse, and yeah,
and the Champions of Angor over there at DC.
Yep.
I forgot the name. Thank you, Ivan.
Yeah.
AKA the Justifiers.
Justifiers. And speaking of reboots, Universal Horror is about to have a reboot.
Another one.
Yeah. I think they just started. They're starting with the Dracula one, but they're making it more Avengers-like. They're all going to be heroic action heroes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I like that idea. I'm going to give.
I don't.
No. I'd rather the pure horror element. I mean, you know, it seems like
if you remember the '90s Mummy franchise,
yeah,
that was very successful. It was more action than it was horror. In fact, I wouldn't call it horror at all.
Yeah.
But they did that, and based on the success, they said, okay, let's do our monster mashup with Van Helsing. And Van Helsing tanked hard.
Yeah.
Had that been successful, we probably would have seen a full-blown Universal monster franchise right then. Probably would have had Van Helsing meets the Mummy or something.
Right.
Well, what do you say, Ivan, about the attempt a few years ago to reboot the Wolfman by Universal?
I thought that was a great movie. It was definitely done as a standalone, with the intention of creating a new Wolfman franchise. I thought it was well done. I thought it was too dark for audiences, visually too dark, you know, not too grim or anything, but if you're constantly starting to nod off in the theater because there's no light coming from the screen, then maybe your movie needs a little bit of light. Take out some of those filters.
And you're not talking metaphorically here.
No.
You're talking literally incandescently.
Yes.
And what about
not being figurative?
And what about Dracula Rising that Universal gave us? Is that supposed to be part? I heard conflicting stories from Universal, according to the interviews in the online press.
You say Dracula Rising. Are you talking about Dracula Untold?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I pulled the OG. I'm sorry.
That's the Iron Man of the new Universal universe.
Not necessarily.
Well, that's what I had heard.
When they released that one, they decided early on that one was experimental.
Mm.
And when it did not do well, and it did not do well, they pretty much said that their new Mummy movie is going to be the beginning of the new series, and they would decide at a later time whether that Dracula Untold story was going to be part of the same universe, or if they'd do yet another version of Dracula, the same way that Disney did with Spider-Man.
So they covered their tracks, basically. Clever.
Oh, yes.
See, that's one thing
they didn't want to back themselves into a corner where they couldn't get out of it. So it's considered currently as part of a different franchise that they have the option to bring in later if they want.
Well, I know Brad Pitt is supposedly down for playing the titular role of the Invisible Man in Universal's reboot. It's supposed to follow the Mummy.
I had heard Johnny Depp wanted to play the Invisible Man.
Who wouldn't want to pay the... All you have to do is the voiceover.
Right,
you know,
right.
How much actual acting is involved. That's the easiest gig in Hollywood.
Yeah, but wouldn't you have to play the role, you know, the sequences where he's got
the bandages
face and the bathrobe, and yeah, you know. There is that. Someone's got to do that. Oh,
the majority of that will be CGI, I guarantee it.
Be expensive. If I was a director or producer, I'd go with, you know, just a guy wearing a bathrobe and tape and a false nose. Oh, yeah, and those cool shades, kind of like the ones you wear, Ivan.
What was that?
If I was producer and I was in charge of the budget, yeah, those scenes, most of them at least, I'd go with the guy with the tape over his face and the bathrobe and the false nose and those cool shades like you wear.
And then green screen out any bits of his actual skin that show up.
Yeah, just go CGI during the scenes where he's unraveling the tape. And that's like maybe one or two scenes.
Well, it depends on how they reboot it. You know, that doesn't mean they're going to do a frame by frame, you know.
No, a frame by frame remake would suck.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, do a lot more.
I wonder how the influence of Hollow Man will affect that reboot. Even though Hollow Man was inspired by the Invisible Man, I'm curious to see if it inspires, you know, the direction that this goes.
Well,
in the two Hollow Man movies, once he went invisible, he stayed invisible.
Yeah. So what?
And that was.
So they're either gonna make it more violent, or they're gonna turn the Invisible Man into another action hero, invisible agent.
And Jack Griffin.
Go ahead.
Jack Griffin is not supposed to be a good guy.
None of the monsters are supposed to be the good guy. That's why they're monsters.
Right.
If they were heroes, then, you know, they would be heroes.
Right.
And the heroes are supposed to be, you know, the characters fighting them, like the Van Helsing or the Van Helsing clone we saw in The Mummy who was fighting Imhotep. His name I don't recall. But was he not played by the same guy who portrayed Van Helsing in Dracula? I think he was.
No.
He wasn't.
Brendan Fraser.
Wait.
Brendan Fraser played the hero of the Imhotep Mummy reboot. Hugh Jackman played Van Helsing in the fairly recent Van Helsing movie.
Unfair, I was talking about the Universal version.
Oh, you're talking about the
yeah,
the guys who fought the
I'm
original.
Sorry. My mistake, yes. My apologies.
I humbly accept those apologies. You owe me a cookie, though.
Well, you know, if it's done by a studio that has a certain number of people who will act in their horror movies, that's who they're going to use. Look at Hammer.
But I agree.
Hammer used Peter Cushing for everything and Christopher Lee for everything else.
But Hammer, for some reason, never wanted to give us crossovers. As much as I love the Hammer oeuvre. I just did not like its lack of crossover.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, what I don't like about them making action heroes is they're missing the point. You know, you can have the villain be the star. I mean, look at, like, the Freddy franchise, the Jason franchise. The villain's the star, but they're still the villain, you know. They may be the one who keeps coming back over and over and over again. But they don't. You don't suddenly see Freddy like having a change of heart by his fifth film and like, I gotta save these children.
Yeah, that would be a little out of character.
Honestly, Rob, didn't Tomb of Dracula do a good job of that with their comic? I mean, keeping Dracula the villain,
right?
Yeah, other characters be the heroes. They introduced Blade, for example, and why can't Universal follow suit?
Because they're looking at Avengers and saying, how can we make money off of Avengers? They're not looking at their own franchise and saying, how can we capitalize on that?
And now, oh my God, DC's creating a cinematic hero universe, so yeah, I get the point there. Maybe if DC would come out with a Lex Luthor movie, or Marvel come out with a Baron Zemo movie or something, or Red Skull movie, maybe then Universal will see it can be done.
Yeah.
Marvel could come out with a Thanos movie telling the story of Thanos' rise to being the biggest badass in the multiverse, at least according to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. I don't
and
think
that would
will.
Be something to see.
I don't think it'll happen.
Sorry. Isn't DC bringing us the Suicide Squad movie that's about villains as the main characters?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yes. And
there's already a lot of hatred over the brief glimpses we've had of what that movie looks like.
Yeah.
Specifically the Joker, but other problems.
But the thing is, the hatred is from like comic book fans. Moviegoers will still like pay lots of money.
to see
the movie.
It wasn't too long ago that we had a version of the Joker that moviegoers fell in love with.
That's true. That's true.
And the new Leto version will be so very, very different. That might make moviegoers hesitant.
See, it's a tough thing because they had to make a choice. Because if they tried to make it too much like Heath Ledger's Joker, then you know they'd say, "Oh, it's not as good as Heath Ledger's Joker." They're trying to rip it off, but you can't beat that. So it's a lose-lose situation, and they really should have just avoided it altogether.
There's no reason to put the Joker in the Suicide Squad, really.
Right.
No.
They could have saved the Joker for a Batman solo movie. They already promised there were going to be Batman solo movies as part of the cinematic universe. So,
but the whole DC universe is built on these mystifying, insane choices that they've made. So,
right.
Is the Joker really going to be a member of the Suicide Squad, or more like what they did in the animated Batman Suicide Squad crossover film?
I think he's part of Harley's origin into getting into the Suicide Squad.
But he has been seen in group shots that suggest
maybe he
is part of the Suicide Squad.
I don't know.
He may not be.
But now that we've heard from James, it's time to wrap up this discussion.
Thanks for playing, James.
Yay!
Yeah, we are just about out of time. So we're going to go to a commercial, and then we come back. We're going to say goodbye.
But we didn't even talk about my favorite franchise of vampire versus werewolf movies.
Oh.
Twilight.
Well, we'll have to save Twilight for another time.
Darn the luck.
All right, so we'll be right back after this break. All right, that's all the time we've got for tonight. Join us next week when we'll be talking with Jerry Winsboro, creator of the Natalia Hyde comic book. Before we end, I want to thank our sponsor, Roxxon Oil Company. And a special thanks to Tiny White and the Deadites for our show's theme music. Thanks to all who listen. Remember to subscribe to and rate our show on iTunes. And as always, everything happens somewhere.